God, right? That's one of the things that we said about them. They're a group who are already believers in God. They're down at the river because that apparently had become a place where those who were worshiping would gather to worship God. Okay? So, you know, we see this group of folks that are believers, though they haven't been taught the word of Christ yet, but they're still their believers in God, and when they're taught the word of Christ, then they accept the word and they become Christians. Then we move on to the situation where Paul and Silas are put in jail because there is some opposition to their preaching about Christ, right? So they end up finding themselves in jail, and who do they encounter there in that situation? The jailer, okay? You know, we have the earthquake, you know, the bars open and the doors open and so forth. The jailer, you know, wakes up, finds the situation as it is getting ready to take his life because, hey, the prisoners have escaped. They stop him and say, you know, hey, you know, we're all still here and so forth. What's the result of all of that encounter? Okay, they take, the jailer takes him, you know, they teach him the word. He asks them the question, doesn't he? What must I do to be saved, right? Now, we didn't talk about this a whole lot last week, but when the jailer asked that question, and this, I think, may be an example of sometimes when people ask questions, there are different meanings, you know, to them than what sometimes do. When the jailer asked that question, what do you suppose he really meant by that? What must I do to be saved? Okay, yeah, you know, if the prisoners have escaped, they're going to kill me because I was responsible for this, okay? So what must I do to keep from being killed, okay, is probably, you know, the basis behind his question initially. But yet, what is the final answer that he really receives from that? Okay. Yeah, and so the salvation that he's looking for really begins as a physical salvation, right? In other words, I don't want to die here. You know, what do I need to do? That's what he's getting ready to do, is to kill himself. They stop him, okay? So, all right, you stop me right now, but, you know, when they find out about this, I'm going to die anyway, so what do I have to do? But they carry him from that concern about the physical death to the spiritual. And, of course, he accepts the gospel, and he and his household become believers. Now, what's different about this fella initially than there was about the group that was there, you know, at the river with, you know, Lydia and all the folks there at the river? What's different about them, basically and fundamentally?
Well, the ones by the river already were worshiping
God, right?
You know, and they were receptive. They were looking.
Okay.
The jailer, we don't have any indication that he was at all.
Yeah, most likely, you know, that's the last thing in the world on his mind, isn't it? You know, this guy is, in fact, you know, the statement here, number two on your outline here, the gospel changes the brutal. Okay? You know, you think about someone who is a jailer, and what kind of a person back then would that be? You know, someone who's rough and tough and brutal, cruel, you know, or what have you. But yet the gospel reaches even that kind of a person. Okay? So, do what? Somebody make a comment? Okay. All right, so, as they continue on in this endeavor here, we find them in chapter 17, in the first part of that, they go through Amphipolis and Apollonia. They come to Thessalonica. And where do they begin? In the Jewish synagogue. Okay? They go to the synagogue and they're explaining. Look at verse 3. Explaining and proving that the Christ had to suffer and rise from the dead. This Jesus I am proclaiming to you is the Christ, he said. Some of the Jews were persuaded and joined Paul and Silas, as did a large number of God-fearing Greeks and not a few prominent women. So, you know, there they are preaching, and the result is at least initially, what's happening? Okay. Which people? Jews. Okay, they're Jews that are accepting so far, and some Greeks, you know, some Greek prominent Greek women and so forth, right? But then what happens? There are some of those Jews that aren't believing, and they're jealous, and they start stirring things up, don't they? Okay? So what does that tell us, continue to tell us about the preaching of the Word?
Some accept it and some don't.
Yeah. Some are not going to like it, and some are going to like it. And sometimes those who don't like it may stir up problems. Okay?
Russ, going back a little bit, back when the when Paul was in jail and the magistrate told him to let him go, get him out of there.
Okay.
Why do you not think Paul and Silas would leave that jail and just get out of there because they'd already been beaten?
Right.
Why wouldn't you think that they would just say, all right, we're out of here?
In other words, why did they make a big point about the fact that they're Roman citizens and they had been beaten and so forth? I think that it has a lot to do with Paul, you know, just kind of displaying the fact that, hey, we do have the right to stand up for ourselves even in the world, you know, and we're Roman citizens, and just because we're Christians doesn't mean, you know, that we don't have rights and so forth. And I think that's an important thing that we need to keep in mind also today.
I think had he done that, then the reputation of the church would have been tarnished as if they were criminals.
Right.
We told them to get out of town, let them out of jail, and they ran out of town. Right. But Paul insisted, no, we're not criminals.
Yeah.
And the history of the church would not have to say, hey, this started by criminals. Right. Yeah. But we got them.
Yeah, we bring them out on the rail.
They're somewhat liable because they were Roman citizens.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we'll see that again later on with Paul. You know, I mean, you know, you don't flog a Roman citizen without, you know, the proper procedures. That just, you know, because those who did it would be punished, you see. Again, we'll see that a little bit later on. You know, another situation that Paul encounters. So, you know, it is a very important factor, you know, in the
world. Even before all of that comes into play, Jesus is prepared always. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, in several different ways, several different times, tells them, you know, they hate their master, so of course they're going to hate you.
Right.
He told them, when you're persecuted, rejoice. And you see later in Paul's writings, his attitude about persecution, he considers it an honor because
right.
he's suffering in the same way that Jesus suffered. So for him to run, to be an opportunist and just run out of jail would be completely the opposite of what he had been taught and later what we see him be.
Well, you know, this, I'm sure that, you know, it probably passed through Paul and Silas's mind. On the other hand, you know, you can see Paul, who I don't think is a big believer in coincidence, saying, wait a minute, you know, this earthquake,
oh, yeah.
I know where it came from.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to stick around here and see, you know, what it is God wants me to do. Yeah, and you know, we don't make a lot of talk about it, but the other prisoners were all there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if he had to collar any of them, but at least the force of his conviction was enough that none of the rest of them ran away either. You know, when they had the chance to make a break, he just said, no. We're all going to stay here,
right?
You know,
and must have had some kind of influence over those other prisoners, you know.
Yeah,
you know, which you know, you think about it, and you go, the other prisoners are probably thinking, I'm not going to cross these two guys because you know, they're thrown in prison with the rest of us, and they're singing and praising God. Maybe they're a little bit crazy. I'm not going to go against these guys, you know. Whatever. I don't know what they're thinking was, you know, but they're looking at, you know, this and there, and they're not going for whatever reason. They're not leaving. They're staying right there.
Well, you wonder, you know. I mean, maybe given the religious, varied religious beliefs at the time, you wonder if one of the other prisoners didn't just look at Paul and say, "You got to have something to do with this."
Yeah.
You know, Paul said, "Uh-huh."
Could very well have been. Yeah. What?
Did that on the boat.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's the thing is that people are recognizing there's something different about these guys. You know, and you do, you see that at different times and different events that are going on. People are recognizing. But yeah, they are standing up and going, hey, wait a minute, you know, we've got legitimate rights here, and you can't violate those. And I think, it has a lot to do with the church and what influence. You know, maybe these guys will learn a lesson. You can't just grab people and, you know, flog them and throw them in jail, you know, at your whim. And that may help, you know, some other folks, other Christians down the road here that maybe they'll think about that. And again, the influence on the church and so forth. So a lot of different things that are going on here.
There's another instance where some of the denominations that they use. When he asked the question, what must I do to be saved? He said, believe on the Lord Jesus Christ and I shall be saved. That's all you got to do is believe.
All you have to do is believe.
Right? That following up with the,
oh, yeah,
what he did.
Absolutely. In each one of these, you know, situations, that's what we're seeing. There's a pattern here, isn't it? You know, it's not just about believing, but it's also about following up that belief, bring someone to obedience to the gospel and do that.
It probably just gets out of hand. It's not the first time that it's happened. Sometimes when people, you may not be able to show them how they're morally wrong. But sometimes it takes the legal system to show them, hey, you don't believe in God, but even the legal system agrees with what I'm telling you comes from God. You know, you can't just grab people and treat them any kind of way. And they have this kind of mob mentality, you know.
Right.
One guy gets them all stirred up and then they just all follow him, which is exactly what they did to Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
And at some point, someone has to say, listen, you can't just do that. And even if you're not going to believe my message, the law already shows us, you know, if you're not going to believe God, believe the law and see how the law backs me up. The law says that I'm behaving according to what's right,
right,
and you're not. And maybe that could be a small step towards, well, maybe you want to listen to something outside. So.
You know, just what 2 weeks ago, the priest were arrested for praying for the mayor. New York City there, they were nailed in front of the building and were praying, and they were put in jail. They actually were put in jail.
I hadn't heard about that.
It was on, you won't hear about it on anybody but Fox.
I didn't even hear it on Fox. I lived there for a long time. Anyway, go ahead.
He was arrested. They were arrested and put in jail. And that was there in New York City.
For praying on the street.
For praying on the street in front of the building.
Huh. Well, that's against the Constitution, too. But I mean, we do have those protections, you know. We are allowed to do that. So it'd be interesting to see where that.
He was interviewing them. That's why I'm talking.
Huh. It'd be interesting to see where that goes. Okay, so you know they're there in Thessalonica, and you know they're teaching. They have some, you know, positive results. People are believing the gospel, but then there are some who are getting upset with them, stirring up the crowds again. So they end up kind of getting themselves out of the town. And where do they end up? Well, they go to Jason's house, and then, you know, from there, you know, this crowd is stirred up and there's a plot and so on and so forth. During the night, they end up leaving. Where do they go?
Berea.
And what is so special about Berea? These are my favorite people. Okay? Yeah. They were noble. They were more noble than the Thessalonians. Now, the Thessalonians, what did they do? They received the word, didn't they? Okay? But these Bereans are compared to them. Who received the word, they who received the word, somebody who's an English teacher, correct me. They received the word, there the Thessalonians did, but the Bereans What did they do? They added to it their what?
Great eagerness.
Their search of the scriptures.
Every day.
Daily. They searched the scriptures daily. And not only did they search the scriptures, but what were they searching for? To make sure that what they were saying was true. Okay? Now, what's the lesson there, obvious lesson there for us today? Exactly. We need to be at least as noble as the Bereans. Okay? That we are searching the scriptures every day to see if what Russ is saying is true.
What did she say?
My own wife.
Been good.
But you know, the thing is that I take that seriously. I really do, as a preacher. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, oftentimes you've heard me say, you know, check it out. That's why I encourage people, turn in your Bible to so-and-so. That's where we're looking. I want you to turn there. I want you to read it. I want you to see if what you're being told is the truth. You know, contrary to what some people think, I am not infallible like the Pope. Okay? There are a couple of people, I think, who maybe believe that. But, you know, I don't know why they believe that. No, but you know, I can make mistakes just like anybody else. And I admit to you, I confess to you, I don't have a complete, you know, 100% understanding of all of the scriptures. I can tell you, you know, my best, you know, understanding, and I share that with you, but I challenge you always to study. To make sure that what you're hearing is the truth. And if it doesn't sound right to you, and you know, there's been times when people have come and said, wait a minute, I've never heard that before. Okay, well, let's sit down and talk about it. Let's look at it. And that's the whole point of it. The reason that is so important to me, and I wasn't really jesting when I said, you know, that these are my favorite people, the Bereans. Because, you know, my experience and my background coming from Catholicism, I think, is the thing that makes this so important to me. Because when I was searching, you know, looking for answers to why things in the Catholic Church were changing as much as they had changed, you know, the answer that I got over and over again, the only answer I got was the Church said so. That's why what was a sin yesterday is no longer a sin today, and so forth and so on. I'm sorry, that's not good enough. It's not good enough. Okay? And so that's why that is so important to me. Okay? Is that people need to be able to know if there's something that they don't understand, if there's something that they're going, wait a minute, that's not what I've always heard. I've always been told this or what have you, okay? Maybe what you've always been told isn't right, okay? And we need to find that out so you know. And maybe my understanding isn't right. So I need to know. Okay? Because the bottom line is that the reason they were searching the scriptures was what? They were looking for the truth. And that's what it needs to be about. The truth. So, you know, we have to be careful, you know, even within our own fellowship sometimes, you know, the things that have been taught, unfortunately, have not always been according to the truth. They have had to do more with traditions or, you know, what Brother so-and-so, you know, came up with and, you know, is always taught or, you know, what have you. And there's, you know, there's been a lot of things, you know, down the road that have been taught that were not necessarily the truth of the Scripture. Fortunately, you know, there's a lot more people that are going, wait a minute here, let's take a look at this, you know, so that we know the truth. And that's what we've always got to be searching for. Unfortunately, there are many people in the church who would rather hold on to the traditional teachings and, you know, what they've always been told and so forth, rather than what the truth is. So again, the bottom line is, we've got to be focusing on searching for the truth. That's the only thing that matters. Okay? The only thing that really matters. Because what you've always been told isn't going to get you into heaven. You know, what the church traditions are is not going to get you into heaven. Only the truth will set you free, according to Jesus, and I believe Him. Somebody had their hand up over here.
I think sometimes people forget working out your salvation is your own personal responsibility.
Okay.
I mean, you can't do it for them. I can't do it for anybody else. And I think sometimes it's our own laziness. We don't want to go to the Bible and study. We just rather listen to somebody telling us what we need to believe. And forgetting that how much you can grow if you do go through the scriptures and search them daily. And I found that out since we started reading the Bible. You know, the thing we got going on here, because to be honest, before, I would just pick up the Bible whenever. But now that I have for a few years now studied the Bible daily, I have gained insight.
That's a lot of difference, doesn't it?
Exactly, exactly. And I would encourage anybody to do that.
You know, one of the things that we have to keep in mind is, you know, when all of us, the Bible tells us we're going to stand before the judgment seat of Christ, right? And you know, I'm going to be held responsible for what I teach to you. No question about that. God's going to hold me responsible. But you're not going to be able to stand before God and say, well, you know, Russ told us this, you know, and I was just doing what Russ told me. See, and God's going to say, well, did you bother to study my word? Did you bother to search it? He's going to hold you accountable, you know, for, you know, studying and searching to make sure that what his word, you know, that you have an understanding of his word. So, yeah, we are, all of us are accountable. I have a higher accountability because I'm teaching. That's what the Bible teaches, doesn't it? Yeah, absolutely. But that doesn't relieve you of the responsibility you have to be a believer. So I just take this opportunity to encourage you to continue to be a Berean more and more.
Accountability, God already showed us with Adam and Eve.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And people read over that and don't even see that. You know?
Yeah, the preacher you gave me.
Yeah. And it's,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Gene?
You know, when people question the faith, you have to go to them and tell them the Bible. They still get a beverage of the faith. You don't know about building, but you get to God, because we have a home, and you can start to have to be
right.
Exactly.
And yeah, and that's the point of this particular part here we need to look at and consider that, you know, what was the overall result of Paul and Silas teaching there in Thessalonica and Berea in this particular section? You have some who are accepting the word and you have some who aren't. Some that are getting violently opposed to the word, aren't they? You see? And yet, what do they keep on doing? Keep on teaching the word, you see. It is not our responsibility, you know, whether someone accepts it or not. And yeah, we may lose some friends, and probably will, you see, because we've tried to teach them the word and try to save their soul. But, you know, we got to keep on doing it anyway, you see, and leave the other part of it between them and God. But we've got to make sure we don't just get discouraged and quit because, you know, somebody, you know, I lost my friend, you know, because of that or what have you. Well, it's their choice, and they're going to have to stand before God, but we're going to have to stand before God as to whether or not we have taken the opportunities God has given us to share His Word with them, in that regard. So, you know, we have to understand that as we're trying to share the gospel with people are not everybody's going to accept it, you see. they're going to reject it, and, you know, many are. And that's just going to be the response of the world. Okay? But I promise you, you keep on doing it, and say, somewhere along the line, hopefully you will be able to convince someone, reach someone for the Lord. And I tell you what, I promise you, that's one of the greatest feelings in the world, is to be able to help someone see the truth of the Scriptures and to be instrumental in bringing that person to the Lord. It's wonderful. It really is. So I just, you know, use that to encourage you. You know, keep on keeping on. No matter what people respond, just keep on taking the opportunity to share the gospel. Okay, so we move from there, and we find Paul there in the city of Athens. Now we have a whole other group of people here. Okay? You know, we've seen some people who are already believers in God. They're searching and they're accepting the truth. We find, you know, a person who is really, God isn't even on the radar screen until God gets his attention with an earthquake. And then we see people who, you know, some who are believers in God but don't believe in Christ. We find others who are searching the Scriptures to find out and make sure that what they're being told about this Christ is true. Now we come to a group of people who are intellectuals. Okay? Here in Athens, what does this is, we're down towards the bottom of our page here, number 4 on here. The gospel confronts the educated. Okay? So here they are in Athens, and you know, what's the situation that Paul finds when he goes there into the city? Okay? All kinds of philosophers, but what else does he find there? Idols all over the place, okay? What's going on in Athens at this particular time? What's the situation religiously? Do what? Idolatry, but what's the thinking here? Yeah. This is a group of people, these philosophers, and they would gather, you know, there in the Areopagus, they would gather to talk about and discuss and philosophize about the latest and greatest ideas that somebody has come up with. You see? So what does that tell you about, let's just kind of the group of people that Paul is going to address here, what does that tell you about their thinking when it comes to deities and so forth?
Well, they went back, really, Athens had a long history of this.
Oh, yeah.
All the way back to Plato.
Oh, yeah.
Who taught Socrates, who taught Aristotle.
Right.
This has been going on a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, the basis of Plato's philosophy was to question everything. You know,
right.
You can't really know anything for a fact.
Right.
So, yeah, when it came
truth,
to God,
absolute truth is, you know, doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Right.
So when it came to God, so, you know, flip a coin, you know, throw darts at the dartboard.
Okay.
Or whatever, you know. It's kind of like the modern-day, I think, counterpart I've come across is the Unitarian Universalist. Mm-hmm. We believe you have the right to believe whatever it is you want to believe.
Right.
You know, it's a weird foundation for religion, but that's kind of how they do. Well, you know, anything goes.
Yeah.
It was wide open.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so then, where would you put, you know, this whole idea of, you know, a level of faith amongst these folks?
They could be swayed to and fro.
Okay.
All those people in Ephesus, you know, you're such that you could be swayed. Whichever guy told you, you're swayed this way or you're swayed.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You know, there seems to be, there's a belief in the concept of deity. Okay? But again, you know, God is what you make him out to be. There is no absolute truth. He is, you know, everybody, you know, does their thing. And, you know, if that's what you believe, then that's fine for you. That may not be fine for me. So what I believe is just as valid as what you believe. Does that sound familiar at all? Yeah. Exactly what people are trying to push more and more today. You don't have a right to judge anybody else and, And that's one of the big things, you know. The Bible says, don't judge, lest you be judged. And so you can't judge anybody else. So therefore, nobody has a right to say that their beliefs are better or more right or than, you know, or truer or anything. Truth doesn't really exist, not absolute truth. Truth today, just like it was back then with these folks, is what you make it. You see? And your truth is different from someone else's truth. You see? Because, you know, who's to say and who's to judge what somebody else should or shouldn't believe or whatever the case may be? And that's kind of where these folks were. You see? So they had a faith in deities, so to speak. You see? They believed in deities, that deities existed, but there was no real firm faith in any one particular deity, again, because then that would be judging and deciding for everyone, you know, that this is the right deity. Okay? So they are totally wide open. And not only that, but they're being philosophers, they're also always searching for the latest and greatest ideas. Okay? So that is going to work to Paul's advantage, isn't it? Okay? So that when he comes on the scene here, what's he able to do?
It's a large crowd.
Yeah. Yeah, let me tell you about this. You know, as I'm wandering around the city and I'm seeing all these altars and idols and so on and so forth, and I came across this one that has an inscription that says, to the unknown God. Now, why did they have that particular altar?
In case they left one out.
Exactly.
Him, yeah.
Exactly. That's to cover all of our bases, religiously, so that in case there's one that we've not realized yet or we've forgotten or, you know, what have you, we don't want to, because, you know, one of the things in their belief or their faith system, the believing in the deities, and they firmly believe this, one thing you do not want to do is what? You do not want to offend the gods. Any of them. However many there are out there, you don't want to offend any of them. You see? Because if you offend the gods, okay, then it's all over, okay? So therefore, since there might be a god out there that we're not aware of, and we don't want to offend the gods, we'll make an altar that's to any other gods out there that we haven't yet identified. And so that's, again, that's the philosophy. That's the concept that they're here. So Paul, what does he do here? He takes advantage of that, doesn't he? He exploits that kind of theology, that philosophy, and he says, let me tell you about this unknown God. You see? But as he proceeds in his message, what does he do? Right? Which really gets their attention, right? Okay? Because, again, they're philosophers and they're going to, you know, hey, all right, let's talk about this idea, okay? But what else does he do? Which God? The one true God. You see? Let me tell you about this God that you've kind of identified as the unknown God. Let me tell you who he really is.
Up all the way to creation.
Yeah, yeah. And so what does he, basically, what's he doing? He's saying, hey, there really is only one God. And so he confronts them with the truth. Thank you. Okay. Now, the interesting thing about this, you know, this encounter here is, you know, what's their response to all of this?
Some believed him, some wanted to hear more.
Yeah. It's like, okay, this fellow's kind of interesting. You know, we've not heard this kind of thing before. We want to hear some more. And so Paul has opportunity to continue to teach, doesn't he? And So again, what's the message here for us? Judy?
One thing I get out of this, again, is that Paul starts where they were at.
Okay.
And I think that is so important when you're trying to teach somebody. Because they're more apt to listen to you if you start from where they at than trying to take them where they have no knowledge of. Right. And you're going to have to count on that. Some of them will respond and some of them
won't.
Will not. And some of them may respond and even fall away later on. But again, that's not your responsibility.
Right. What do you do?
Responsibility to teach.
Right.
You know. And then let God give you insight.
And so we see another example here of Paul doing what? He connected the dots, didn't he?
Exactly.
You know, you guys got all these gods out here and everything. Let me tell you here. And he goes all the way back and he starts connecting the dots for them. You see, takes them from where they are to where they really need to be and then understand it. So again, that's one of the things that we've got to. We've got to focus on. That's why I gave out those sheets that I gave out for you to help you to be able to connect the dots. Okay, we move from there on to Corinth. Okay, real quickly here before we finish up here. You know, we go to Corinth, and what kind of place are we dealing with now? Okay, it's a busy place. Corinth is a major trade route. Okay, people coming and going from where? All over, and so what kind of people, generally speaking, are we going to find there in Corinth at that time?
A lot of merchants and people from all over the world.
People from everywhere, okay? But primarily, they are non-Jews. They're Gentiles. And you know, with the kinds of religious practices that were going on in Corinth, to say they were pagans is putting it gently. Okay? In fact, the term was used oftentimes, the term Corinthianized, okay, which generally referred to what? It was a reference this is a bad place, okay? This is one of the most immoral places on the face of the earth, okay? And that's basically what it was all about. There was every kind of immorality that you can think of, and much of it was involved in their worship. Okay, you're talking about temple prostitutes, both male and female. You're talking about everything. There wasn't anything that, wasn't going on with these folks. Religiously. Okay? And yet Paul goes here, and what does he do?
He preaches that he thought this was an opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, I'm getting out of this town as quick as I can, but no, Paul begins to preach, okay? He starts, where does he start?
Synagogue.
Okay, but where does he start teaching?
Synagogue.
In synagogue, okay? But what happens in synagogue? They don't want to hear it. So what do we find happening here? What does Paul do? Not only did he just go to the people, but what did he do before he went to the people? He shook the dust off his feet. See? And that, we need to understand the significance of that kind of an action. You see? Because that's exactly what it meant, didn't it? I accept no responsibility for you. You are on your own. Meaning, you will stand before God and you will account for this. But I have nothing more to do with you. That's a severe thing. That's not something that Paul did lightly, I don't believe. You see? And so that should give us an indication of how much opposition that Paul was receiving from the Jews there. Something bad.
Out of this world. Yeah. And he would just say, you know what? You're on your own. I have nothing else to do with you. Right.
And so really it's from here that we see Paul really beginning and focusing on a ministry to the Gentiles. In fact, he would refer to himself as the apostle to the Gentiles. And so we see that major shift at this particular point on. And so real quickly, before we run out of time here, you know, one of the things that we find happening is, what was the result of Paul's preaching and teaching there in Corinth? Do what now? Chief ruler believed. Well, a whole lot of people believed, and there was a church there, right? And later on, Paul would write two different letters to that church, okay? And one of the things just to kind of show you and help you to just to keep in mind, you know, how people are evolving in their understanding of the Scriptures, and they grow and they change, and at least that's what we're supposed to do. You know, when Paul begins teaching the people here, they accept the gospel, they become believers, the church is established here, but as I said a moment ago, later on, Paul would write two different letters to them. And mainly the gist of those letters, the first one is to do what? Not really. The first one was to get some things straightened out, because they had a lot of sin problems going on in that church, you see. And he wrote them to chastise them the first time. In fact, there was the whole issue of, you know, and he talks about the man who had his father's wife, and you're just accepting that. And there's just a whole list of problems that the church has experienced, but yet you go and you look at the beginning of that letter, how does Paul address the church there? He addresses them as brothers. See? They had a lot of problems. They had a lot of learning, a lot of growing to do. See? He writes the second letter to address, you know, okay, they've you know, they kind of corrected some of these things and so forth and so on. So yeah, there's some encouragement, but here's some other things you need to be focusing on and so forth. But what we're seeing here is the results of the gospel coming into a place that, you know, if you were to take a dartboard and put a map of the world up there and throw a dart at it, and, you know, and by chance you would land in Corinthian, you'd say, I want a do-over. Can I throw the dart again? That's the last place in the world I want to go, you know, to teach the gospel. Send me back to China, okay? You know, because, you know, but yet look at the results of preaching the gospel, even in a place that was as godless as Corinth was at that particular time. Right? Now, who was doing the work? Thank you. Make sure we don't forget that. All right? None of it would have happened had it not been the Lord's doing the work. He was using Paul and Silas to get done what he wanted to get done. Okay, lesson number 9. We'll start that next week. These will be over here on the podium for you. So you can pick one of those.